Many thanks for inviting me. Today I would like to talk about the long-term developments on the Amsterdam labor market. So what I would like to provide is a long-term perspective, and also a somewhat broader perspective on the changes on the Amsterdam labor market. And I will first give a very brief analysis of the Amsterdam labor market in 1990. Mm. I guess some of the previous speakers already came up with some more historical analysis. I will do that as well. Then I will make a very brief analysis of the Amsterdam situation. I will try to explain what happened in between. And I will end, of course, with some conclusions. If you look at the situation in Amsterdam around 1990, it was a very dire situation. Unemployment was very high. And almost 25% of the whole labor force, not just migrants, well, migrants was even around 40-50% unemployment rate. So at that time was very, very high. And it was especially concentrated among the young, among women, and among non-Western migrants. So a very specific incident. And I vividly remember what Amsterdam looked like in the 80s. It was dirty, there were a lot of heroin addicts. It provided a great backdrop for one of the best Dutch novels, but maybe that's a benefit. That's not doesn't weigh up to the cost. And what was also striking was that Amsterdam at that time had an unemployment rate which was twice the Dutch average. So within the Netherlands, Amsterdam was very much worse off. We have a very strict chairman, so I will do this very, very brief, this part. But the unemployment situation in Amsterdam can partly be explained by the specific corporatist welfare state that we had. So we had strong protection for the insiders, with high levels of decommodification, high social benefits. But given this particular situation, there were also high barriers for newcomers. So that was the other side of the coin. So when deindustrialization hit the Netherlands, people lost their jobs, and it was not at first compensated by a growth in the service sector. So there were these what's called velvet exit routes. So if you were working in manufacturing with just one small complaint, you were able to get a disability benefit with very high levels of income. Many people did that. There were almost 1 million people at the end of the 1980s living on these disability benefits. So it was a sick country also in that sense, although these people were doing all kinds of jobs on the side. So there were strong protection of the insiders and high barriers for newcomers, and that of course translated in these high unemployment rates, especially among the young women and Western, non-Western migrants. Around 1990, I also vividly remember an article or a survey of The Economist saying that the Netherlands was the sick man of Europe, which indeed it seemed to be the case. But then almost at the same time when that survey was published, there was a turnaround. So the Dutch economy started picking up again. And especially in Amsterdam, so there was a very strong job growth, especially around Schiphol. But at first, they were attracting workers, not so much from Amsterdam, but from other places. And there was, at the time, the Minister of Social Affairs. And in a typical Dutch fashion, he criticized the unemployed in Amsterdam. He said it's only within cycling distance of Amsterdam, so go on your bike, so to speak, get on your bike, and then get a job at Schiphol, which didn't happen because of the mismatch. So within the Netherlands, Amsterdam stood out still as a kind of loser. The unemployment rates kept on being quite high. But things changed, and after 1996, a strong job growth, concentrated in services, notably in producer services, and to a somewhat lesser extent in personal services. And unemployment rate in Amsterdam has come down very, very steadily. This is the development of the number of jobs in Amsterdam. So after 1995, you can see that it really started rising. And at some stage, at some point in time, the labor queue became so short that they had to employ, so to speak, non-Western migrants. So what happened? This is about the changes in the production systems, our very strong growth in producer services. Mm-hmm. It's not it's
not a, a separate sector, but cultural industries are also very strong in Amsterdam. So it was very much producer services and cultural industries which were driving the growth of jobs in Amsterdam at that time. So what happened with unemployment? Unemployment went down. This is a different, I guess it's the same in London. We have all kinds of unemployment figures. Mm-hmm. And so according to some unemployment figures, I think these were the best unemployment rate in the at the end of the 1980s was about 25%, but these are different figures. But with these figures, I'm able to create a longer time series. And you can see, if you look at the development, that unemployment really went down in Amsterdam. And Amsterdam now is one of the, in terms of, if you compare it to other cities, is one of the great successes among the cities in economic terms. Job growth at first was highly selective, so it was higher educated workers, partly from outside Amsterdam, but the strong demand effectively, as I just told, shortened the labor queue, and also migrants were drawn in. And they benefited from that as well. And what we're seeing is that the especially among second generation migrants, I'm always wondering to what extent people will stay migrants in the Netherlands, maybe 20th generation migrants, anyway. But the second generation, that's a very, I can see the sense of having them as a statistical category. So if you look at their employment went up quite significantly. Also their rate of active labor participation rose. You would think that it's quite a small rise, but many of them are in secondary and tertiary education, so they're doing much better than in the 1980s. And also the situation of the first generation migrants showed a strong improvement, So if you look at their labor market participation, it rose from rose a few points, 2.3%, but still it rose. And what is very striking is we had this very generous welfare system, which was designed in a situation where there were not that many migrants, and then this whole thing happened. The crisis, the corporate welfare state was becoming too heavy. But if you look at the rate of people on welfare, it showed a very strong decline. Especially the second generation is much less dependent on the welfare. It was in 2006. I will say a bit more about the post-crisis situation, but it was in 2006. It was very much smaller than let's say the generation of their parents. What we're also seeing is a rise in self-employment. At first, it used to be that many migrants were, if they set up a shop, it would be some kind of corner shop, a small grocery or a cafe. What we're seeing now is the second generation is very much active in producer services, sometimes also in cultural industries. So there's also a diversification in that sense. So these are all indicators of it's doing much better. So what has happened? First, I will try to be very brief about this. There was a long series, typically Dutch, we don't have any revolution, we have these long series of incremental changes after endless negotiation. Anyway, it was effective after a while. So a reduction of minimum wage, a different welfare system, more active labor market policies, so also lowering the barriers of entry, also lowering the protection of the insiders. And what has also happened, given the inertia of the institutional framework, a lot of loopholes were used. So part-time temping agencies, and what we're seeing now in the Netherlands, there is a huge increase in one-person firms. So many of them are home-based, but a one-person firm, some of them are doing this out of their own free will, but some of them are part, you know, it's much easier to hire a construction worker, which is a part of a one-person business than to employ such a person. It's much more flexible. Anyway, it boosted labor market flexibility. A rapid rise of female labor participation. In the 1980s, the level of female participation in Netherlands was at the same level of Ireland, very, very low. And also a gradual shift in the demographic composition, smaller cohorts. It's also important that Stephen Weiss here. And the younger cohorts were, of course, much better educated, and they were much more suitable for jobs in the service sector. So these are the general changes. But now a closer look at what happened in Amsterdam. Amsterdam, I guess that many of you have been there, is at least some of my colleagues claim it's a global city. I think it's a pocket-sized global city, so it's a bit different. But it's very rich in cultural amenities. And it's and from, let's say, one of the worst case labor market situation in the Netherlands, it has completely turned around. It's now one of the best cases. So it's highly attractive for work, leisure, especially living. Housing prices have gone up. Have not been, even the 2008 crisis have not hit these housing prices very, very significantly. It's not on the same level of London, of course, but still. So it's highly attractive. What we're seeing now is that, that many people graduated in other Dutch university towns, in Leiden, Utrecht, Rotterdam. They, as soon as they graduate in these cities, they move to Amsterdam. It's not just because of the production system, it's also because of the partner pool that's there. And also many highly educated people, so they are in an age where they're looking for partners. So in that sense, it's also very important. And if you look at the production system of Amsterdam, it's a bit like London on a much smaller scale. So it's historically strong in producer services and cultural industries, and they showed a very strong growth after 1995. What we're also seeing, and that's also important for migrants, because of the minimum wage in the Netherlands, it's less, I guess, than in London. There has been an expansion of personal services. Two-earner households, they generate the demand for personal services. And we're also seeing, of course, is that the older generation of guest workers, the Moroccans and the Turks, which came to the Netherlands in the 1960s to work in the factories, they are already in their retirement age. So we now are looking at the second generation, which is much better positioned for all these new jobs. If I look at the situation, you can see that these endless small changes were in the end effective in lowering the unemployment rates in Amsterdam. But what I also think is important, at least for the Dutch context, I don't know that much about the UK context, it was very much based on the loophole, so the flexibility which is needed for this new kind of production system was very much achieved by all kinds of loopholes like temping agencies and one-person businesses. And I think that was key to the successful transformation of the Dutch economy after 1995. And it's not just our university which is pioneering all kinds of flexible contracts, but it's a much broader phenomenon in the Dutch economy. And what's also important, people say a bit more, will also respond to what David just said. Among cities, there are clear winners and losers. So in Amsterdam, the situation is, I think, quite favorable, also for migrants. It's a different ballgame for Rotterdam, which doesn't have this production system based on producer services and cultural industry. So it's much more difficult for them. And Amsterdam has been able to benefit from its historic orientation on these particular kind of activities. It was also able to reach the non-Western migrant population, so there has been a strong expansion of jobs for them. Unemployment has gone down. But it's still the case that unemployment is higher. And after 2008, you see almost the reverse of what we were seeing before that. Unemployment among Moroccans, among the second generation Moroccans and Turks, went up faster than among the indigenous Dutch population. But it's not on the same level as other Dutch cities, so it's still quite favorable. And it has gone down already, so in that sense it's also quite stimulating. If you look at the situation of Amsterdam, so when the first three presentations this morning, they were very much focused on the economic effects of migration. And first I would like to say that with every significant economic transformation, there are winners and there are losers. It seems to me that the winners are sometimes quite abstract, you know, they're dispersed, the winners of the effects of migration. It might still be the net effect might still be positive, but the losers of migration, I think that ties in with what David just said, the losers might be socially concentrated, the lower segments of society, spatially concentrated,
in particular neighborhoods, and maybe also they might also be part of a particular cultural segment of society. So not much prone to globalization or cosmopolitan openness. I mean, it's all very well for me living in a nice neighborhood in the university city of the university town of Leiden to be in favor of migration, because I can go to a Moroccan restaurant. You know, we have a house cleaner from Ghana, so it's all very well for me. But living in some other neighborhoods, it might be slightly different. So, and the elections, not just in the UK, but also in France, and we have been struggling with this awful right-wing populist party for a longer time. But still, I think we should be very much aware that the losers might be very concentrated, and we should take them seriously. I'm not saying that we should kick out the migrants or whatever. That's not what I'm saying. We should take them very seriously. And secondly, I've been reading quite recently two books by Michael Sandel, both Justice, and the other one is What Money Can't Buy. And he comes up, I always thought before reading these books that Aristotle was, it doesn't make any sense to read this guy anymore. But Sandel has convinced me of the contrary. Mm-hmm. And he talks about the telos, the purpose. So I think we should also go beyond the, let's say, the economic equations and think about what's the purpose, the telos of a city, and for whom is this? For whom is this city? So it's not just... Mm-hmm. For economic purposes, it's not just a machine for commodification and profit making. Maybe city is also something else, and maybe it's also something that should generate solidarity. So those kind of things, openness. Maybe we should think about that as well, and also look to how migration fits within this broader picture.
Okay.